This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As we migrated more of our business to the cloud, we were seeing expenses go up, but we couldn't pinpoint the cause. It seemed less of a cloud, more of a fog. That's why we brought on Cloud Optimizer, and they saved the day.
Are you seeing your cloud hosting bills go up and you're not sure why? It's time to put Cloud Optimizer to work for you. Cloud Optimizer analyzes usage patterns, right-sizes resources, leverages discounts you may not be aware of, implements automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service.
With Cloud Optimizer, we have our spend under control, our company is more agile, profitable, and we're getting peak performance from our cloud.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hi, folks. Welcome to Inclusive Collective, where we share stories and learnings of inclusive people, organizations, and innovation. I am your co-host, Nadia Butt. I'm an organizational development and belonging strategist. And as always, I am so lucky to be joined by Rob Hadley, a people and culture strategist specializing in DE&I and people analytics. Hello, Rob.
A specialist strategizing in. I could have done that. could have mixed it up a little bit there, right?
I don't even know what I read. Wait, did I read it wrong, Rob? For real?
No, you're right.
Oh, okay.
You paused. You paused though, and I thought you're right. I could change the words there. Yeah, it'd be fine. How are you, Nadia?
I'm doing well. How's your week going? What I meant to ask you is, are you reading anything fun these days, or watching anything fun, or any debates that you're keeping up with?
The only thing I'm just got a new book called Evidence Based Management, which promises to be really good. I know that that's not fun.
Yeah, I was like,
seems to be really well written, and so I'm kind of excited about diving into that a little bit. How about you, Nadia? Is that fun? Did you qualify that as fun?
Yeah, depending on what you enjoy, but to me that sounds like fun. I'm actually reading a book called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker.
Yeah.
So the psychology and like benefits around sleep.
I got one of these Whoop trackers. I really don't like the Apple Watch. I've always made fun of it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'm never going to get that. But I would like to know, like, from the health standpoint, like what's happening to me.
Like what your sleeping habits are or something?
Yeah, just for exercise and for sleep habits and just general health. And so the Whoop tracker told me that I need to go to bed at like 8 o'clock at night. I was like, I probably haven't been to bed at 8 o'clock at night
since I was eight.
Right. So I was like, maybe a little aspirational. So that is funny. So I learned that I'm not sleeping enough, and that's probably like most people, but
yeah, that's true. All right, Rob. Well, this week on Inclusive Collective, we're going to do a few news stories, and then we're also going to have some raves and rants, which I'm really looking forward to.
A rave and rant sandwich, I believe.
A rave and rant sandwich.
That could be the title of the episode.
Actually, it should be. Well, let me go ahead first.
All right. Sounds great. Let's get to the deets.
Rob, do you like a good road trip?
Absolutely.
Do you appreciate like a good rest stop while you're driving?
I don't know if those exist, but yeah, definitely. Some of them don't. If there was something that I could consider like a good rest stop, yeah, for sure.
Okay. So according to an AP News article, New York lawmakers have introduced a bill that would require restaurants in the New York State highway system, rest areas in particular, to operate 7 days a week. This bill, if it turned into law, would impact a few restaurants, one being the fast food chain Chick-fil-A. Uh-huh. Chick-fil-A, for some who don't know, people love its chicken sandwiches, but also dislike it. I've actually heard it described as hateful chicken, as its founder's opposition to same-sex marriage, also keeping its stores closed on Sundays for religious purposes. And so just your thoughts on this.
My first thought was I thought of the Kanye West song that I sent to you.
It's called Closed on Sundays.
And there's another Kanye song. I think it's one with Jay-Z. They mention Chick-fil-A as well. So definitely mm-hmm. So that's the company Chick-fil-A keeps.
Yeah.
You know, I think Chick-fil-A should be allowed to close 7 days a week, to be honest with you, Nadia. You know, one of the,
so you're not a frequent flyer.
No. And I think that one of the lawmakers said that if people want fried chicken, that they should be able to have it on Sundays. And I disagree with that. I don't think that there's any rights to fried chicken. I don't think those exist in our country. You know, there's a way that this makes sense from a policy standpoint. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, but the state could potentially get more sales tax revenue from those Sunday sales. But Chick-fil-A could say people irrationally love our food. And so, you know, if you put like a Kenny Rogers Roasters or something like that in there, which is garbage, you know, you're not increasing sales. So, you know, I agree that, you know, Chick-fil-A is not good. But if you've ever had a Kenny Rogers Roasters, if you've ever had that.
No, I don't even know what that is.
It's like also a highway stop chicken restaurant. And so, you know, that, you know, it pains me to say because I'm a big fan of Kenny Rogers, the artist.
Are you?
But, you know, especially his collaborations with Dolly Parton in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But the food is bad. So long way of saying, I don't like when liberals engage in unnecessary culture war policymaking either. Just the way I don't like it when conservatives do it. But what are your thoughts?
So, you know, like you mentioned some benefits that might be reaped from it. Like the bill's meant to give travelers in New York a variety of food options, particularly like over the weekend. Some lawmakers are defending Chick-fil-A and their religious freedom, while others are just simply like boycotting the company in general. I mean, for me, this is tricky as someone who shops at their, I shop at like my neighborhood South Asian store, like grocery store owned by a Muslim who shuts down on Fridays between the hours of 12 and 2 for Friday Jumma prayer. I think I'm okay with that. But, you know, I'm not saying that it's not right, but it doesn't. Like, isn't that what hashtag capitalism is all about? Like, you get to do what you want when you own a business. I don't know. So it will be interesting to see, because if this becomes the norm in New York, if this bill is passed, I do wonder what other states would do, how employees might be impacted. Some folks might gain from it from being employed on a Sunday. Some get paid time and a half, while others may feel like their religious freedoms are being stomped on. So
yeah, it seems frivolous to me. And you know, I live here in Utah. I'm not of the Latter-day Saint faith.
Sure.
And most businesses are closed on Sunday. And you know what? It's kind of delightful.
It's kind of delightful
that things aren't open on Sunday, right? Yeah. Like I when I grew up and going in small towns, you know, things didn't open on Sunday, right?
Sure.
And it was the day to not engage in hypercapitalism. So I'm fine with it. I disagree with Chick-fil-A's stance on a lot of other issues, but on this one, I'm in support of, if they don't want to serve their, their
fried chicken,
very average chicken on Sunday, I'm fine with it.
All right.
So, let's talk about Philadelphia. My second favorite city, my second home.
Yep.
You know, and I was listening to the Welcome to Miami song this last week, Nadia.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know that one?
Yeah.
Will Smith groups LA and Philly in that song.
Well, he's from Philly.
I know, but it's like, but those two should not be grouped together. Okay. Philadelphia and LA. They're very different cities. They're both staying jiggy, according to Will Smith. But Nadia, the newly inaugurated mayor, Sherelle Parker, which we've talked about on this show, signed an executive order this couple weeks ago that removes the college degree requirements for certain city jobs where learning, don't have to have a college requirement. Apparently, learning how to play beer pong at a four-year institution is not essential to all city jobs.
Tell Brett Kavanaugh that.
As I did, as I learned, go Buffs. So only about a third of Philadelphia residents aged 25 and older have a bachelor's degree, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. I see this very positively. What do you think?
Same here. I'm here for it. Yeah, that's kind of be my slogan here. More inclusive job descriptions. I'm asked to review many job descriptions from clients for inclusive language, including from like a gendered, racial, socioeconomic, or any other kind of form of like bias or discrimination perspective. So describing the role as needing like a college degree when the role really may not require that, I would say like don't make level of schooling a requirement unless a candidate actually needs a degree for that job, or to do the job, I should say. I'll also say, like, when you put in there that you're when you do put that in there, you're assuming that someone went to a four-year college and that you may not be open to the possibility of other ways of learning, like trade schools or certifications in a subject, or even someone's prior work experience mm-hmm. and exposure in, you know, gaining different types of skills and the transfer of skills.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just kind of wrap this up with just like it. To me, it suggests such a bias against other qualified candidates, right? Like companies that require a minimum academic criteria oftentimes perpetuate like a socioeconomic inequality or bias.
For sure.
So, right.
For sure. I think especially within, I think especially within the city jobs, state jobs, right? So like mm-hmm. those 4-year college requirements were meant to be exclusionary, right?
Yeah.
It's part of a meritocracy myth. You know, for decades, it kept good paying, good benefits, city and state jobs out of the reach for folks that are underrepresented at 4-year institutions, typically non-white workers. And so, you know, neither of my parents had 4-year degrees, right? Mm-hmm. And so my mother worked at the state of Colorado for 35 years and is enjoying mm-hmm. a very nice retirement, always had access to really great benefits, you know. And if that 4-year requirement was in place in 1971, when she first started working there, you know, she, you know, that would have changed the trajectory of, you know, and obviously, you know, she's a white woman, so things could have been somewhat different. But it just, it might have changed the trajectory of her life, her career as well. So, you know, mm-hmm. these are the types of jobs that they lift people into the middle class and they help folks pay for a better future for their kids, right?
Totally.
So these are really important jobs. And I think it's a great first step. And I think other states should follow and other companies are starting to follow as well.
Absolutely. You know, organizations should want to engage with and seek those candidates that have like a growth mindset, who are like willing to learn new skills or build their capabilities. Mm. So it's just a reminder, you know, that candidates, you know, they can learn the role and grow into it or transfer the skills that they already have. And then, of course, it widens your candidate pool in general. So reap that benefit of a diverse team. Okay, well, thanks for that, Rob. Let's take a break and we'll be back with our rants and raves. Welcome back, folks. We are at the raves and rants section of our episode. I'll go fast. We have, it's the sandwich.
Extended raves and rants, right?
Extended raves and rants. And it's a sandwich. I'll start with the rave. So according to ABC News, California becomes the first state to offer health insurance to all undocumented immigrants. And just to give you a little bit more information, about 700,000 adults between the ages of 26 and 49 will be eligible as of January 1st this year. And so, yeah, California will welcome the new year by, you know, becoming the first state to offer health insurance to all of its undocumented immigrants. And I'm really, really excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So immigrants deserve health care, too, apparently, in the state of California.
Do they? Huh? Yeah. That's what I hear. Yeah. No, they
very do. Very progressive. I mean, just really out of the box thinking there in California.
That Governor Newsom.
That sunshine just makes people happier, right?
It really does. It really, truly does.
All right, Nadia, I got an extended, speaking of sunshine, talking about the great state of Utah, I got an extended rant here.
Okay.
In the context of our Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, right? So as we speak, Utah legislators, I believe that's what we call them, are working to craft anti-DEI legislation. Utah's governor, Spencer Cox, said recently that having people looking to get state jobs explain their thoughts on DEI is evil, right? So, you know, so sometimes, you know, if you're one way to get around and diversity requirements is just ask people how they think about DEI. And so I think that he called these types of practices evil. So I do want to give a little bit of a tiny little rave to the Salt Lake City Tribune, which published the governor's quotes on DEI related to issues immediately follow coming out of the murder of George Floyd and all of his support for Black Lives Matter, and cataloged all the different statements that the governor made up until now, right? So from I'm totally on board with Black Lives Matter to now DEI is evil.
Okay.
And so Nadia,
done a lot of growing in that.
He's had a lot of time to reflect.
Or maybe not growing. Yeah.
He's had a lot of time to reflect, Nadia.
Sure.
And so you know me, right? I try to stay above the fray on some of these things. But you know, think about how limited your moral character has to be. Be like leading the parade 3 years ago.
Yeah.
To now actively working with conservative lawmakers to limit the reach and effectiveness of DEI programs, particularly on college campuses in your state, which is not a beacon or paragon for diversity to begin with.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so I think about this in the context of our Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Mm-hmm. We know that the governor will be giving, like many governors of states all across this country, they're trying to do away with DEI. They'll be giving a speech somewhere for Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and they're inevitably going to be quoting
the same speeches.
There's only one speech they know. I can assure you that there will only be one speech that they're quoting from, right? And so this is part of my annual invitation to white people to listen to or read or reflect upon the works of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. outside of the I Have a Dream speech, right? And so one of my favorites is a speech called The Birth of a New Nation. And in it, Dr. King says that the oppressor never voluntarily gives freedom to the oppressed, that privileged classes never give up their privileges without strong resistance, and that freedom only comes through persistent agitation, right? And so as we go into 2024, let's let this be the year of persistent agitation because we're going to need to do it.
I'm snapping over here for you, Rob. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. I also just want to, like, I feel like Utah, this governor, and all of these politicians that are, like, super anti-DEI, whatever they think that is, they just want to remain relevant. Like, that's what they're doing. They probably do believe it, too.
They're pandering.
That's right. And it's... Yes. So I love the encouragement to seek all, you know, other work that Dr. King has done. I'll also just encourage folks as we are leading up to Black History Month, which is, you know, a great month to reflect on advocacy for BIPOC folks. But also outside of that month, you can do it. And behind me is a picture of Malcolm X, who I really treasure and admire. There's other Black activists. From a century ago to even modern day that also offer a lot to say and that are just as great to quote.
Exactly.
Right? There's like, let's many not things use the to same quote. Yeah. Let's not use the same quote let's, every single
day. Yeah. Year. Yeah. Let's do something. Let's catalog. And when we come back, let's highlight some white politicians MLK. Quoting from the I Have a Dream.
Yeah. Let's do that with organization leaders too. Like how absolutely. Many would love that. All right.
Awesome. All right, Nadia, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more Inclusive Collective right after this. Welcome back to Inclusive Collective. Nadia, got one more rave for us.
Okay. So according to disabilityscoop.com, the IRS said that the federal gift tax exclusion increased to $18,000 effective at the start of this month. The annual deposit limit for ABLE, which is the Achieving a Better Life Experience account, is tied to that measure. So it will rise as well. The new limit is up to $17,000 last year, thanks to inflation, and it reflects a change in the maximum allowable ABLE account contribution that's similar to what's been seen in recent years. A little background on ABLE for folks that don't know. They offer people with disabilities the ability to save up to $100,000 without sacrificing eligibility for Social Security and other government benefits. Never heard about this. I don't know if you've heard about this. Medicaid can be retained no matter how much is in the accounts. Currently, ABLE accounts are offered through programs in 47 states, many of which are open to individuals nationwide if they have a disability that onset before age 26. And under a 2022 federal law, that age limit will rise to 46 starting in 2026. So I feel like this is not just a rave, but an informative tip for those who are interested in learning about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Nadia. I think I'm going to start a segment this year, you know, in all the different news segments that we highlight, the things that we like and that we everyone in the audience probably supports, and it's going to be called, this is something that will go away if Donald Trump is elected. Like, this is the kind of shit that would never happen if there was a conservative president, right? And so it's really important to think about, like, you know, that elections matter, and so we're talking about, this is an election year, and so these are the type of things that
are very important, you know, for a lot of communities that we support and advocate for.
We'll get to election season when we get there. But yes,
we're there.
We are there. Okay, Rob, well, that's it for Inclusive Collective this week. Just a reminder that if you're looking for DE&I and workplace culture strategy, consulting, problem solving, or training, you can reach out to me at Nadia at nazconsultants.com, and you can reach out to Rob at rob@takanoconsulting.com. Inclusive Collective is a production of Refilion Media and edited by Ari Mathay. We'd love to hear from you folks, so please send us your feedback at inclusivecollective@refilion.com. You can also find us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Please be sure to follow us on LinkedIn so you can subscribe to our IC monthly newsletter, which is not really monthly now. It's more like...
it's monthly.
It's monthly. Okay.
Yeah, we're back.
January 2024, baby. And if you like what you heard, please, please download, subscribe, and rate us. Please, we like 5 stars wherever you get your podcast today. Thanks, folks, for listening. We will be back next week. Be well.
Thanks, Nadia.